Hello and welcome to Putting Town Centres First, a new podcast by the Heritage Council. I'm Alison Harvey and I will be interviewing guests throughout the series. Challenges of COVID have placed unprecedented pressures on traditional town centres because of the effects of lockdown and other constraints. Yet the heart of many of our town centres contain layers of history and heritage. Town squares, streets, laneways, traditional, sometimes landmark buildings and streetscapes that have survived the rigour of centuries of time are vital for our historical memory and shared sense of place. In a landmark move, the Heritage Council has now launched its first ever podcast series. Putting Town Centres First provides timely insights, not least the multi-layered challenges that are posed by COVID-19. This new series aims to raise awareness and understanding of the key issues now confronting our historic town centres. The series highlights the overwhelming need for innovative and collaborative responses and solutions. The new podcast series is part of the innovative Collaborative Town Centre Health Check Programme, which the Heritage Council set up with partners in 2016. Enjoy episode one of Putting Town Centres First, where I chat to Dr. Philip Crow from UCD. Great to have you here, Philip. I was just wondering if you could maybe just give our listeners a background to your role in UCD and your experience and what you do every day.
Sure, Ali, my role in UCD is a lecturer or assistant professor in climate responsive design. I've started this role in August, so it's all quite new, although I've been in UCD for about the past 8 years. The role is between the School of Civil Engineering and the School of Architecture, Planning and Environmental Policy. And I'm running a new master's along with my colleague Oliver Canan. It's a master's in architecture, urbanism and climate action. And I suppose my experience is 14 years in practice in architecture and urban planning in Dublin, 9 years of which I was director of sustainable design with EMCO, working with Laura McGahey and Yvonne Cullinan. I went back and did a master's in carbon management in Glasgow, and that led on to doing a PhD in UCD, none of which I planned. It was all a big surprise that I ended up back in university. And I was funded by an EU FP7, Framework 7 project called TURIS, which was transitioning towards urban resilience and sustainability. And then as a consequence of that, I started up, along with my colleague Aoife Corcoran, a social enterprise called Space Engagers. That was in about 2016. That came out of a demo project and the tourist project. And we've evolved that into being effectively a collective for research and co-design. And I've done a number of postdocs, and then that's all led on to this new post, which, as you say, started a couple of months ago.
Very good. So you're sort of a mixture of academia and social enterprise. I think I met you with through the Space Engagers, yourself and Aoife. I think we were introduced at a conference that we were all speaking at. So we've been working together for quite a few years, I should say. So it's all been very enjoyable.
I think we have some shared interests or something.
Yeah, we're both totally enthusiastic about sort of town centres and communities and urban kind of, revitalization and, as you say, sustainable community. So can I just ask you, I'm fascinated about the Centre for Irish Towns. Obviously, the Heritage Council, we were hugely supportive of that. Could you maybe talk about, you know, why was it set up? Why did you feel there was a need for this new centre and what's its key role? What are you trying to achieve, you and your colleagues at UCD?
Sure. So the Centre for Irish Towns is basically a transdisciplinary centre for research and collaboration. The fact that, you know, towns are obviously a critical part of the cultural, social and economic structure and fabric of the island, and you have, you know, maybe about a third of the population living in them, and they have huge potential, but many of them are in decline and they face many, many challenges. And one of the challenges that, as you know, Ali, I'm particularly interested in is ongoing long-term vacancy and dereliction, and then the lack of investment in the physical and social fabric. So from our research and practice, Orla Murphy and myself, I think Orla is going to be talking to you in one of the later podcasts, we're very aware that many of those challenges are exacerbated or sustained by a lack of data and knowledge on our towns. And Ali, you know that very well from the work in the Collaborative Town Centre Health Check, and also from a lack of joined up thinking and a lack of a coherent evidence-based approach in relation to things like governance, policy, or even funding. So we are trying to start up a center, which at the moment we are building a network and making a case for this center. We're trying to put a shape on it. And What it will do is facilitate transdisciplinary collaborative funded research. It'll bring together a diverse range of perspectives and create networks of researchers and practitioners to affect change and influence policy by having this evidence base. I suppose our main audience is the research community, but also decision makers and people living in towns. We've started it up just in the past year. As I say, we're trying to put a shape on it and try to understand what it can do and build a network. We've got a small pot of funding from the UCD Earth Institute, but to move beyond this initial stage, we really need to locate some substantial funding, which we are looking into at the moment actively.
I think it's a wonderful idea. You know, I mean, obviously with the Collaborative Town Centre Health Check Programme, which you've been involved in right from the start in 2016, late 2016, I mean, it was very clear we needed the universities and the ITs. You know, we couldn't have actually set up that programme. As you know, the first year we didn't have any funding. We set it up because people kept coming and asking, is there anything that you can do in the Heritage Council? So it was great to have you on board right from that get-go. But I think, you know, it was really important that I think that the role of the universities and ITs, it's created a sort of neutral space where we could move into and sort of have a really informed conversation about what is the future of these towns and what are the issues, you know, rather than, I suppose, you know, it is that collaborative approach so that we all sort of break out of the silos, which are doing us no favour. So, I mean, I very much welcome your initiative with Orla and the university. I think it's really wonderful. You mentioned networks there. In terms of networks with other universities, you know, what are your sort of, what are your plans?
Well, I mean, it's interesting you're saying jumping out of silos is really important and working across disciplines. I mean, even in the university, you know, that is something that is really universities struggle with. So you very often meet somebody from a different school who's actually doing research in your area, et cetera. So we're really conscious that that happens within UCD, but also within and between all the other third level institutions on the island, north and south. So we are trying to build this network up so that we know who's doing what. You know, there's people doing research on towns related to social policy, to computer science, to civil engineering. We need to know all of it and try and get a picture and see, can we coordinate that? So we've been running workshops with universities. Quite often you find that you're introducing people to one another within the same institution. And that's not a failing as such, it's inevitable because these are huge organizations and people are extremely busy in them. So we're starting out with that academic network, but that's not the only thing we want to create. We want to then reach out and connect with state agencies, with government departments, with local authorities, with civil society organizations and with communities so that there is a network that links everybody together and we can address these shared challenges. And then I suppose the other thing to say is that there are some critical relationships that we want to make with Queen's in the north, with the School of Natural and Built Environment, and with the University of Edinburgh. There's an agreement between UCD and Edinburgh, and we're talking to an institute there called the Edinburgh Futures Institute, and we're really keen on that Scottish connection. Well, we're keen on both connections. I mean, the Queen's one is extremely important because this is a shared island challenge, obviously, but Scotland is interesting to connect with because in many ways, as you know, Ali, they're about 12 years ahead of Ireland on these issues related to towns, and they do provide a really inspiring and really relevant precedent. Going back to 2008 when they had a Scottish Town Centre Policy Group, I think they called it, and then all the way up to the present day where they have a Scotland's Town Partnership. Mm. And they also have a website where you can go on to find lots of statistics about towns called Understanding Scottish Places.
Yeah, we've a lot to learn, haven't we, from the Scottish in a good way. And we also have Jamie McNamara, who's one of our podcast speakers. He's going to be later on the series as well. Jamie works for SPAB, Society for the Protection of Ancient Buildings, and he's also involved in SPAB Ireland, and he's from County Meath originally. So yeah, I mean, I suppose it's trying to reach out, isn't it? And you know, that network is sort of Irish diaspora as well as the Scottish, and we have had quite a few people who are from Scotland, you know, doing the workshop with Phil Prentice. You know, that collaboration really just doesn't need to sort of stay in Ireland. We need to sort of reach out, don't we? And with the sort of post-Brexit coming, you know, January or whatever, Scotland definitely without bilateral agreement between Scotland and Ireland.
Yeah.
We really need to focus on that. And it's interesting, like with the CTCHC program, we actually set up that workshop with Phil Prentice before that bilateral agreement was signed. I absolutely love your sort of ideas there, you know, about just reaching out and doing collaboration on all levels and networking on all levels. It can only be good, can't it? We can only, you know, sort of bring in ideas and share ideas. Is that really what you're looking to do? Share and exchange? And
absolutely. And, you know, none of this is rocket science, and it's, you know, shared challenges, very similar problems experienced in Scotland, experienced in Northern Ireland, and experienced in Europe. You know, I've done some research for the Heritage Council, as you know, looking at the situation in Denmark and in France, and they share similar problems. And I know Orla will talk about taking the free market exhibition to Venice, and lots of people coming up to them and saying, look, we've got the same challenges in our towns and all of our different countries. So there's a huge amount to be learned from other places. And, you know, it's not that there's a totally different culture in these places, so we can't possibly transfer these ideas to Ireland. You know, a lot of these ideas are absolutely transferable, and we need to look into them. We need to pay attention to them.
Yeah. And I think as well, then obviously sort of 2021, because Brexit will come in January, you know, in terms of like Horizon 2020, you know, things that we really need to sort of ramp up. We need to increase our links, don't we, really, with other European countries? I mean, personally, I feel that that's going to be really important next year. We've got to sort of talk more to the Dutch, to the Danish. You know, we've got to get out there. We've got to break down the sort of barriers. Because we're an island, sometimes I feel it's actually quite hard to do collaboration. But I suppose that the catalyst has been this COVID-19, that everybody has moved online. So maybe that might help us, you know, build those networks, you know.
But also the whole European research infrastructure is based on, you know, collaboration between different countries and learning from different countries. So the Horizon 2020 program, which is obviously coming to an end, that's going to be replaced by Horizon Europe. There's currently a Green Deal program out at the moment. There's a lot of programs out there that, as a research institution, we can hopefully, it's not so easy, but hopefully we can get some funded research projects up and running that are partnering with other countries. And the critical thing about these new programs is they're not just focused on research institutions. There's a huge emphasis on working with civil society organizations, with local authorities, state agencies, with innovative companies, etc.
I think that's so important, like, you know, the sort of synergies that are created, you know, the social capital, you know, how do we invest in that and make sure that our processes are modern, you know, and as we've said earlier, there's no point sort of staying in these silos. We have to sort of break that down and move forward with a new kind of collaborative process.
Absolutely.
Okay, so in terms of, like, you've done a lot of research, Philip, as I say, you know, you and I have worked together for whatever, 4 years or more. So I don't know if I can squeeze it all into this podcast, because obviously you've got so much done. So one of the things that we obviously focused on, we had a group and you did some research for us last year, kindly, thank you very much. We did it with the Housing Agency, the Heritage Council, the Housing Agency, the Collaborative Town Centre Health Check Programme. So you did a wonderful report that was, we had a ministerial launch March 2019. We were trying to look at incentives, what other countries were doing for reusing vacant buildings in town centres, because I suppose we felt that maybe not enough was being done in our own country. And as you say, to sort of look around and see, okay, what are they doing? What are they doing in Scotland? What are they doing in Denmark? And what are they doing in France? What did you sort of learn? I mean, I really enjoyed reading that report. I thought there were some amazing golden nuggets that you came across. Do you want to sort of give, you know, an overview if you can?
Sure. I mean, there was a huge amount in it. I mean, it was an incredibly rich experience in terms of findings. I mean, maybe if I could just, I give a quick overview of what it contains. So we looked at different programs for incentivizing the reuse of buildings in town centers. And we looked at Scotland, as you've just said, and we looked at two programs there, the Town Center Empty Homes Pilot Program from 2015, and then a subsequent Rural and Island Housing Funds program. And then in Denmark, we looked at a thing called the Village Renewal Pool. And that was about addressing rural to urban displacement by considering, and this may seem controversial, but considering shrinking villages. Denmark is a country of contrasts when it comes to vacancy. And I know, Ali, you have a particular interest in vacancy percentages. You know, in Denmark, they tell me that they can have up to 25% vacancy in towns, but only in towns that are very remote from the cities. because they have this very strong rural to urban displacement in Denmark. It sounds that it's almost stronger than it is in Ireland. When you look at Danish cities then, say look at Copenhagen, they actually have almost negligible vacancy. So Denmark is a very interesting precedent to have looked at, and lots of things came out of looking at that village renewal pool. But I suspect I find the most interesting one that we looked at was in France, and it was called Revitalization des Centres-Bourgs. I apologize for my French pronunciation. It goes back to GCSE French, which is many years ago. But the French are really, really interesting because they consider vacancy as an identifier of endemic and systemic problems. They don't see it in isolation. It's a systemic issue. And they acknowledge at the very highest level. So you're reading documents that are coming from the Prime Minister in France, talking about the role of towns for provisions of services and maintaining social cohesion. And there's an enormous emphasis on social cohesion. They see it as an issue of national import. And you can understand that by looking at the challenges that France faces in terms of integrating different communities. And what they're trying to do is avoid people and places feeling left behind. So they see social cohesion as absolutely critical to the efficient functioning of their country, and that the towns are an absolutely critical part of it. And so they have this program that is cross-sectoral, many different organizations coming together. So they have an equivalent of the housing agency. They have something called the Commissariat General for the Territorial Equality, and different state agencies. So it's very collaborative. And this, it's got two purposes. The first one is to support the reuse of degraded housing owned by people on low incomes. And they're looking at that in terms of affordable rent or sale and using that as a mechanism for revitalization. So it's kind of critical that it's in private ownership, it's for degraded housing, and using the adaptive reuse of these buildings as a mechanism for revitalization. And they also, the program also has the purpose of providing a catalyst and enabler for regeneration. So what actually happens is that the municipalities are provided with tools and resources for revitalization from a central fund. Well, there's a couple of funds that link into it. And one of the key resources that I was particularly taken with, and I might talk about it later, is a dedicated project manager. Now, that doesn't need to be a project manager or an architect or a surveyor. It could be somebody from a number of different disciplines. But what they do is they bring together diverse funds from different places. So you could be coming from energy or it could be coming from heritage. And they bring together initiatives and stakeholders to collaborate and work with one another and bring all of that together in that town into some sort of a coherent and coordinated project that they can drive forward.
And it's interesting what you're saying there about the sort of core theme is social inclusion. You know, it's a very different platform, isn't it, really, to what we have in Ireland. Could I just ask you then as well about your research? I mean, one of the things that I remember when you were sort of presenting your findings, you talked about compulsory sale orders or whatever. And I know the Scottish obviously have been looking at this through the Land Reform Commission. What are your thoughts on CSO, Philip?
I suppose my thoughts on CSO are that it seems like a very logical alternative to compulsory purchase orders. So if you look in Ireland, how we've used compulsory purchase orders, it's quite sporadic. It doesn't seem that it works really for everybody. You do get pockets of people using it, but you quite often get told that it's not really fit for purpose. And it's interesting that it seems to be the same in Scotland. So I think it was the Scottish Empty Homes Partnership proposed a compulsory sales order mechanism for the Land Reform Commission in Scotland. They were basically wanting to have it in there as a means to unlock what they called, well, they were just very difficult properties to unlock, that to bring the vacant properties back into use. They just needed some other mechanism that wasn't a CPO. I suppose the advantages they see are that the local authority doesn't have to buy the property. And I suppose buying the property is very expensive, or can be very expensive. And apparently it's also just really difficult to come up with a price.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that, you know, the whole thing about value for money for taxpayers, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if that is at the root of it. It'd be very interesting to look into that to see, well, what's at the root of CPOs just not being used? Because very often you will find people saying, well, why don't the local authorities use the powers that they have? But presumably there's pretty good reasons why the local authorities aren't using their powers that they have. So obviously a compulsory sales order means that you're basically forcing somebody, the property owner, to put it on the market. So the market then decides what the value of it is.
I think that's it, really. You know, so if the market does, you know, the invisible hand, whatever you want to call it, you know, then the price may go down. Do you know what I mean? Whereas, you know, is there, the question I would love to know is, you know, are we paying too much in these CPO in the orders? So, you know, it's definitely something that I think, you know, your centre can look into, which would be really, really good for everybody. In terms of, you've done more research as well. You're busy. So in terms of the report that you did for the former Department of Rural and Community Development, I think it was the pilot looking at six towns. Could you tell us a wee bit about the sort of report that you, you know, what your recommendations were? What were the sort of core findings?
So this is the Town Centre Living Initiative, which was, as you say, run by the Department of Rural and Community Development. And it involved six pilot towns. So we have, I'm going to try and remember them, Boyle, Banagher, and Ballinrobe, and then Callan, Cappoquin, and Castleblaney. There you go, three B's and three C's. And I worked on a synthesis report for that with Orla Murphy and my colleague from the Centre for Irish Towns. The government made a pocket of money available to each of the towns in order to develop innovative proposals to respond to the challenges of vacancy and underuse of buildings, and to try and understand why so few people live in town centres. Again, you know, looking at the experience of the six towns, it's quite difficult to summarize the findings because there were an enormous number of them. One would be the uniqueness of this study in that each of the towns engaged directly with individual property owners. So it wasn't, you know, looking at the CSO data and saying, oh, there's X number of vacant units, or doing a sort of desktop exercise and thinking, well, the reason they're vacant is obviously to do with finance. These towns all looked and talked directly to the property owners to try and understand why these buildings are empty. And it proved that it's not just about finance. Yes, there's rarely a chance of return on investment, but it's much more complicated. Finance is only part of the issue. There's also supports. So there's gaps in knowledge, there's gaps in expertise and capacity that people have. And these are really complex processes. You also have issues of imagination. So in terms of the ability of people to see the potential of a property or see the wider context and see the wider potential of the town. And also then an issue that I hadn't expected, and perhaps that was stupid of me, but I didn't realize that confidence would come into it so much. So that people need to have confidence in the future of their time in order to invest in their time. So why would somebody invest if they don't know what their neighbour is going to be up to or what the local authority might be planning in the future? And there were a lot of comments about being suspicious or nervous about what might happen to the town in the future. Another lessons learned would be that all of those pilot towns demonstrated, I thought, how productive a modest input of resources can be, on how a dedicated project team can really have an enormous effect. All of them built an evidence base for actions going forward. They carried out or imagined and put together proposals for innovative projects that were able to go on for further funding opportunities. They built a lot of momentum and trust with the community and other stakeholders, and they all set out plans to revitalize the town centre. So if you take an example, Cappoquin in County Waterford, they have a clear roadmap for the future coming out of this project. They have really innovative proposals as to how to bring properties back into use, including a sort of rolling development model where profits of one sale support the next adaptive reuse. So it's a sort of knock-on effect. They are proposing an incentive scheme that would bridge the gap between property values and development costs. They're proposing a one-stop shop for property owners to provide support, to provide advice, and also maybe design solutions that can be adapted because there's a lot of repetition in the types of houses. And then also they're proposing a regeneration entity that would be between the local authority and the community development company. And that would drive revitalization in the town centre.
Okay, well, I think that report, we can put, you know, post that when we do the put up the podcast, so, you know, that people can download that report. I mean, that's so important, that report. It's really, you know, to get those sort of the learnings and, as you say, the lessons learned, and really not to sort of, you know, like once you bring people together, there has to be something delivered, you know, and it's really important that those expectations are, you know, that people work with those communities going forward, you know, that they're not.
Yes, absolutely.
They're not left to go back down again, you know, because I do know that myself through my own work expectations that, you know, once you raise expectations, it's really important to have the follow through.
And you build up trust with these communities.
Absolutely.
That can go very quickly.
So important. I mean, that's fascinating, all the stuff that you've been saying there, you know, in terms of like what could be done. Obviously, we need new processes. We need new systems. You were mentioning the French. I mean, it's all kind of linked and there's common themes going through all the, you know, what you've said there. Just in terms of the programme for government then that was announced in June, there's a Town Centre First policy. You know, what research would you like to get stuck into, do you think, with this Centre for Irish Towns? You know, what's sort of top of your list, given everything that you've said there? You know, what would you want to do immediately to support this Town Centre First policy?
Oh, okay. So, I mean, and basically the Town Centre First policy needs to not be seen as a policy on its own. It needs to have a lot of infrastructure around it. And they refer in the document to the Scottish government. They say that it needs to be modelled on the scheme developed by the Scottish government. And I mean, the obvious first thing to do is to learn about that, you know, how'd that work out? What has Scotland been up to? We already have quite a lot of knowledge between you and me and Orla. We have quite a lot of knowledge on what has happened in Scotland, and that would be really useful to look into. The programme for government also states that policy should prioritise a collaborative and strategic approach. And I think we could learn a lot from the French experience and delve deeper into that, and also the Danish experience, looking at governance structures, programmes, supports that need to be in place, such as that town centre officer or management team. And then the programme for government also talks about an expanded town and village renewal scheme to bring back vacant and derelict buildings into use and promote residential occupancy. It'd be very interesting to look at that, though, at the scale of the street or the block, not just the individual buildings, because we're not going to get very far if we're just looking at individual buildings. We could be looking at case studies of the experiences of a range of different people and organisations in bringing properties back into use. It's not that simple. We need to understand what the barriers are. And we need to also review current and past supports for the reuse of vacant buildings and underused buildings and see how they've worked out. So you've got the repair and leasing scheme, you buy and renew, CPOs, have we already discussed. And we need to look at case studies that tell us about the experience of private individuals, but also of local authorities and approved housing bodies.
I think that's it. You know, the sort of system needs to be more integrated, doesn't it, really? And we need to sort of try and get our economies of scale and our economies of repetition, you know, and as you say, that sort of sharing, you know. So with the CPOs, you know, how do they work and where do they work? And if not, can we do CSO, you know, can we move it on and sort of, you know, change the game a bit? Okay, so thank you, Philip, very much for all those ideas that you have, clearly. Okay, so we have a question here that we are going to ask, or I'm going to ask all the speakers in this podcast series. So in terms of, if you could do one thing for Irish town centres, okay, just what, you know, one, what's your top thing, what would you do?
I think based on the research that I've been carrying out in the last number of years, the idea that I find the most seductive and the most practical, the one that makes huge amount of sense to me, is this idea of a dedicated town centre officer or small management team. So it would be very like what they have put in place for this programme that we were talking about in France called Revitalisation du Centre Bourg. And that person isn't dissimilar, say, to the town architects that we've had in Ireland in a small number of towns. So if you look to Westport, and there's somebody that drives forward change and brings people together. They gather data, they maintain an evidence base, they connect with different agencies for funding and supports. And it crucially just drive forward change with and for communities and working closely with local groups. And they could offer advice through a one-stop shop, bring in resources as they're needed, perhaps from the local authority. And they could run co-design or collaborative and participatory planning workshops and help support community-led initiatives.
Yeah, I think design is really important, you know, in terms of trying to sort of create a very strong culture of what is good design for our town centres. I think that's definitely a space that we need to, you know, engage in as well, as you say, you know, what is good design and what is it in an Irish town and a town centre. So Well, Philip, thank you very much. It's always lovely to talk to you. As I say, we've worked together for quite a few years now, so I wish you the best of luck with the Centre for Irish Towns. And thank you for your time today.
It's a pleasure, Ali. Thanks a lot.
So, folks, we'd love to hear what you think of our podcast series. Please share your thoughts and ideas. Get involved in the conversation. Rate, review, subscribe. Follow the Heritage Council on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And please have your say. We want to talk to you.